Welcome to the Baseball America podcast. I'm Matt Eddy, sitting here with Ben Badler, and today we're going to talk about top prospects in the minors, ranked by position, in honor of today's position rankings, which are going up on the site today. Ben, we're going to start with pitchers, in particular right-handed starters, and I think the area we should explore first is some of the players, some of the pitchers you like a little more than the consensus, which this year we had six individual rankers. So who are some of the pitchers you liked better than the consensus?
Well, I think looking at the, Matt, looking at the top right-handed pitchers, I know we break it down by right-handed and left-handed pitchers. The top right-handed pitchers, I agree with the top six guys that we have on our list. I think there's clearly, six, or there's really about 10 or so elite pitching prospects for me if we include left-handers, but just looking at the right-handed guys, Tommy Hansen, Neftali Feliz, going on down the list, Trevor Cahill, Rick Porcello, Chris Tillman, Jared Parker. To me, those are pretty clearly, the six elite right-handed pitching prospects in the game. How you mix and match those guys, I think you can mix and match them a few different ways. Trevor Cahill is a guy I like a lot, obviously. His ability to, get so much sink on his fastball, get so many ground balls, yet at the same time have a really nasty curveball that he's able to throw and get swings and misses with. He doesn't just get swings and misses with that. His fastball has so much movement on it that even though he's only throwing it, 88 to 92 miles an hour, maybe topping out at, 94 when he, reaches back and wants to get a little extra mustard on it. But, he doesn't need to throw it hard. The fastball has so much movement and so much life on it that, hitters are either going to swing and miss at it or they're going to, hit it into the ground. So I think, to me, those are kind of the six elite guys. Looking a little bit further down the list, one guy I like a lot is Michael Main, who checked in at 25. And, obviously we're talking about right-handed starters. It's obviously going to be a deeper list than some of these other lists that we're talking about, just because there are so many pitchers in the minor leagues. Main, I think, has a really great arm on him. Very athletic. He had a little bit of injury problems this year, which is obviously a concern going forward, is his ability to stay healthy and stay on the field. But he has a good fastball, an excellent curveball. He had good strikeout numbers this year when he was on the field. So I think he's a guy to watch going forward to jump up this list. One other guy I think I probably like a little bit more than most is Nick Barnese of the Tampa Bay Rays, a right-handed pitcher that they had, who was in, he didn't even play in a full season league this year, but I think going forward he's definitely a guy who could jump up this list a little bit going forward. And I think I already like him more than some of the other names, on the list. Obviously I'm a little bit ahead of myself there in terms of how high I am on Nick Barnese, but he has a good fastball, a very good curveball also. He does a lot of things well on the mound. He had a lot of success this year as a 19-year-old. So to me, he was a guy who I'm pretty high on. Matt, who are some guys that, you look at the list and, who are some of the guys that really jump out to you as some of the elite guys who are, going to be seeing in the major leagues in the next few years?
Well, I'll preface this first by saying that I am, in fact, biased here. I covered the Padres and the Mariners, so I'm going to go to those wells and mention Matt Latos with the Padres, who was the first pitcher, actually, who did not make the top 100 prospects that we publish annually. He was the top-ranked right-handed starter who fell just outside of the 100. Latos, incredible 92 to 95, down in the zone, hammer-breaking ball, and he's taken to a traditional changeup, which the Padres have taught him. He threw more of a split version of that pitch as an amateur. And Juan Ramirez with the Mariners, kind of slightly built now, but does it real easy. 92, he'll show you 97 occasionally. Like Latos, incredible life down in the zone, and at times an incredible breaking ball, but that is a bit sporadic at this point, so he'll have to improve upon that as he goes to the California League next year. Was there anything else with right-handers you wanted to talk about? Maybe some guys who are perhaps a little overvalued on this list?
Well, I think, like I said, the six guys on the list who, those are kind of the elite guys. So you can mix and match those guys in a lot of different ways. To me, I guess I'm not quite as bullish on Jake Arrieta as a lot of people are, or number 68 right after him, Nick Adenhart. You know, Arrieta, a college guy in A-ball. There's some reasons for leaving a guy at one level all year, but he didn't make it out of A-ball. And I know he went to go pitch in the Olympics. But even in high A, his command, his control, he doesn't really throw, enough strikes. I think his stuff is good. His fastball and his breaking ball, at least, those are good pitches. I just wonder, he's going to be 23 next year, which isn't old by any means, but, I just wonder if that control is really ever going to develop enough for him to throw enough strikes to be a good starting pitcher, or if maybe he ends up, better suited in relief. And Nick Adenhart, to me, is, he has a lot of talent, but at the same time, 2008 was not a good year for Nick Adenhart. He got off to a nice start and then didn't give up a lot of runs, but, he also wasn't missing a lot of bats with his stuff. Another guy who doesn't throw a whole lot of strikes, doesn't really control the strike zone from the mound. So, his stuff is, it's good. It's not great stuff. It's not, lights out stuff, or I think he'd probably be seeing, some more swings and misses from the hitters when he's on the mound. So those are two guys who I might be a little bit more hesitant on the most. So those would be the two guys that kind of jump out to me. But, we mix and match these guys all the time. Everyone has these different opinions on guys. So those would be the two guys that kind of stand out to me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same question. I have a sneaking suspicion I know who you're going to say as we switch gears to left-handed starters. But for the purpose of this podcast, same question. Who are you a little less enthusiastic about, whom other staff members seem to like quite a bit?
We don't have to start with all the negative, Matt. We can go to the positive. Why don't you ask me who I like more than most? I don't want to start off on a negative tone here.
Well, just mixing things up.
All right. Well,
keep this podcast fresh.
All right. We'll start with some of the negativity for you today, I guess. But it's not that. I don't mean to be negative about it. It's just that relative to where others perhaps see him. I'm a little bit lighter on Derek Holland than some guys are. I understand he had an excellent year for himself, and really did he rise more than probably any prospect in baseball this year in terms of what he's been able to do for status. Probably I think it's a good argument for that, but he usually works in the low 90s with his fastball, and at the end of the year he was getting up to 94, 95 a little more consistently, and touching a little bit more in the high 90s. But I think normally he's going to work a little bit more in the low 90s. And I realize he had a lot of success in A-ball, with that fastball and his ability to command that fastball. From reading Aaron Fitz's scouting reports and Jim Callis's scouting reports on him from the Midwest League, and then that Jim did, and then that Aaron obviously did from the Rangers list, it sounds like his secondary stuff is, it's okay. The changeup is a tick above average, and the slider is, still kind of coming around. If he can turn that changeup into maybe a devastating pitch, I could see it working out, he would take a pretty big leap forward in my book. But right now, I'm a little more hesitant on guys who are just dominating off the fastball, especially in the lower levels of the minor leagues. I realize he had some brief success in Double-A. Striking out a lot of guys and not walking too many guys. I think he only gave up 3 home runs all season and 150 innings or whatever it was. But I'm just a little bit more cautious on Derek Holland than most folks, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and similar types of arguments might be made about someone like the White Sox, Aaron Pareda. And if you're feeling especially injurious, you could say the same thing about Madison Bumgarner with the Giants. Do you think those are fair criticisms?
I think so. I think with Pareda, some scouts I talked to see him as more of a seventh or eighth inning guy in the bullpen. His slider is it's an all right pitch. It has its days, it has its moments, but generally and with the frequency you'd like to see it. So I think he's a guy who could end up in the bullpen. Bumgarner, I think he's a little bit of a different case because he is so young and just had so much success dominating low A hitters. I went to go see him in a start when he pitched at Greensboro, and he was just absolutely dominant. You know, he barely needed his slider. He barely used his changeup at all. But he was not only was he just dominating hitters, he was just absolutely painting the black inside, outside, with his fastball. It was incredible to see, you know, and at that kind of velocity, you know, 92 to 94 miles an hour consistently from the left side, that's an incredible weapon. You know, he is so young. He was 18 years old for almost all the season, and he really didn't throw the breaking ball much when he was in high school. So it's really kind of a newer pitch for him. It sounds like it is making some strides. So, you know, there's some concerns for him. He's, you know, a little bit funky on the backswing. He's still only in low A. You know, maybe he starts the year in double A and that accelerates his timetable. But anytime you have a pitcher who's, you know, at least a couple of years away from making an impact at the big league level, you know, there is that possibility of attrition and a guy breaking down. I don't think Bumgarner is necessarily a higher risk than most guys, than most pitchers, but, you know, it's obviously something to be concerned about. You know, that said, he's the number three pitching prospect from number three left-handed pitching prospect in the game. And I certainly, you know, agree with that. I think that, you know, those three guys, obviously David Price number one, Brett Anderson, Bumgarner, and Mattis. To me, those are, you know, we have them 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, to me, those are pretty clearly the four elite left-handed pitching prospects in the game.
Yeah, and the way you describe Pareda just now reminds me, and probably many listeners, of the good guy's current left-handed reliever, Matt Thornton.
He gets that. I've heard that from scouts as well. He gets that comparison a lot from them.
And I can see that. Okay, so we've gotten the negative out of the way. Let's hear about some of the guys outside of those top four whom you're a little higher on.
Yeah, I think, I guess I was a little bit surprised at how high Jonathan Neese was, so maybe I'm not necessarily higher on him the most, but you know, he's a guy who's had a success. He keeps the ball on the ground. You know, he's pretty close to making an impact in the major leagues. He's a guy who could be someone in 2009 who helps out the Mets at the big league level. So I think he has a bright future ahead of him. You know, sometimes I think we have a tendency to label guys as, you know, he's kind of a safe number three or a safe number four. I think that's a little bit overused sometimes in terms of, you know, how safe a guy is or, you know, how limited his upside is. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think he's a guy, you know, a guy like that, you know, it's not necessarily a safe pick by any means. I think he's a guy who could have some considerable upside at the big league level. You know, looking on down the list, number 16, Danny Duffy, is a guy I like a lot. You know, he struck out almost 30% of guys in low A this year. You know, he's not going to overpower you with a fastball, and I'm curious to see how that works out for him as he moves up some levels and whether that is able to translate, you know, into double A, triple A, and at the big league level ultimately. But I think he does have he has an excellent curveball. You know, he has enough on his fastball to get hitters out. He misses a ton of bats and he throws strikes. So I think he's a guy to look for going forward, to probably to move up this list, you know, when we come out with you know, another list hopefully in 2010. And Matt, for you, or, you know, when you look at this list of left-handed pitchers, are there any guys to you who jump out as guys who you're, you know, pretty high on, or not necessarily higher on than most, or maybe you can answer that question too, but, you know, who are the left-handed pitchers to watch going forward in this year?
Two college lefties, both from the 07 draft, who have to prove their durability issues are behind them for different reasons. Brett Cecil with the Blue Jays, the left-hander, was a closer in Maryland. The Blue Jays have kept him on a very strict pitch count. You know, the guy, he's got a knockout slider, good two-seamer. I mean, the guy's got the raw tools to be a mid-rotation starter or better, but he just hasn't been really let loose yet at the minor league level, and that leads to durability concerns. But provided that he can hold up as a 200-inning starter, I think he's got a bright future. And the second pitcher is Nick Hagedorn, the Red Sox supplemental first-rounder, whom we were very aggressive with in ranking in our top 10. He ranked number 3 with the Red Sox. He ranks just 19th here among lefties, but pre-Tommy John surgery, he was a guy who pitched in the mid-90s, and if he can make a full comeback, I think he's somebody to watch this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, Hagedorn, Jake McGee, a couple of power arms, you know, maybe McGee. You know, McGee, obviously another left-handed pitcher with the Tampa Bay Rays, who ended up getting injured this year. You know, maybe he's kind of in a similar boat, but he's, you know, he's pitched in double A. Maybe he comes back and, ends up being the closer for the Rays down the line. I think that's, even before he got hurt, that's something, a role that I think a lot of scouts looked at and said, you know, this guy could be, you know, a power left-handed arm out of the bullpen one day and just be lights out, you know, pumping 96, 97 miles an hour out of that arm consistently in a one-inning role when his power fastball can play up. And then, you know, you mentioned Cecil. I think, you know, David Huff is kind of, I don't want to say similar to Cecil. I mean, in terms of, you know, their styles of pitching, that's not really similar at all. Huff is more of a, you know, a plus changeup, whereas Cecil is, you know, his slider is his out pitch. But in terms of the, you know, the durability stuff, and when we look at pitchers and, you know, look at their performance level in the minor leagues, you know, both guys obviously put up great numbers, but you wonder, you know, Huff had an injury a couple of years ago where, you know, that kind of has limited the innings that the Indians allowed him to throw this year, or this past season, I should say. So, you know, he was only throwing five or six innings every time out. So we only had to get through the order, you know, two, maybe the top of the order a third time. Cecil's kind of the same situation. We didn't really see them get through go through the order that third time. So you wonder, you know, how is he going to hold up? How are hitters going to react to him, especially at the major league level? When they have to go through the order that third time. So I have those are the questions that we have to deal with sometimes when, you know, just looking at the raw output and the performance of some of these pitchers, that you have to take into account some of the context that's behind the numbers.
Yeah, and it's interesting, another pitcher who might fit into that same group is the Braves' Cole Rohrbaugh, who ranked as the Appalachian League's number one prospect in 07, he started last year on the DL. I'm not sure if he finished healthy or not, but in between he tore up the South Atlantic League in low A, and we credited him with having the best curveball among left-handed starters in our best tools by position, a new feature for us this year, which you can read all about on the web version of top prospects by position.
Yeah, Rohrbaugh was he's probably one of the most disappointing guys who ended up getting injured this year, for me at least. I was really looking forward to know what he was going to be able to do fully, kind of in a full season league, because his ceiling is quite high, or his potential is very high, with what you look at what he can do from, you know, 90 to 94 miles an hour from the left side with that big curveball that he can throw. So hopefully he'll be healthy for a full season this year.
Yeah, and it's funny, a trend that I'm noticing in all your selections, Ben, is that plus, if not plus-plus, curveball, you know, not just breaking ball, not slider. It seems like all your selections, and maybe this isn't the forum to go into it, but you tend to favor pitchers with big curveballs. Is that a fair assessment?
I think especially more so for right-handed pitchers than left-handed pitchers. I think, you know, the fluidity in the wrist, and, you know, I think there's some natural ability to throw a breaking ball. And, you know, I do a lot of our international coverage, too, just talking to international scouts about, you know, kids who sign at 16 years old. They're evaluating kids who are sometimes 15 years old, and they're talking to me, and we get into some of these discussions sometimes about, you know, a guy doesn't have a, you know, they knock a guy because he doesn't have a good breaking ball. It's like, well, you know, he's 15, he's 16 years old now, you know, maybe will he develop one in the future? You know, some guys are split, but a lot of guys I talk to say, you know what, it's almost as natural as just throwing the ability to throw a, you know, a 90 to 95 mile an hour fastball, just that natural fluidity, the ability to spin a pitch. You know, it's not necessarily going to be polished and refined, you know, at 16, 17, even, you know, 19, 20 years old. But to be able to show that potential to spin the ball, to flash an occasional above average breaking ball. So that to me is a key. I think you see a lot of guys who have, you know, cruised through the minor leagues a lot of times. You know, you can deceive a lot of guys in the lower levels of the minor leagues, especially even on through Double A, with a, you know, a plus changeup that can really fool a lot of guys. There's some deception in your delivery and rack up, you know, a lot of strikeouts. Most guys, you know, first year guys right out of high school and sometimes even in college aren't used to seeing, you know, an above average changeup, a truly plus changeup. So if you show that and you're showing that in A ball, you know, you can catch a lot of guys off guard just by doing that. Get them out front, get them to swing and miss at a pitch they're not really used to seeing. So I think that, you know, the development of the breaking ball is definitely a key factor in that innate ability. You know, it's obviously debatable whether it is innate, but I think that, you know, there's only a certain amount of projection you can provide on a pitcher's breaking ball to be able to project going forward. So that to me is a key. I think left-handers, maybe it's a little bit of a different issue sometimes for them because they do face so many right-handed batters where the changeup can be more of a, you know, more of a weapon for those guys. And you see, obviously, I mean, Cole Hamels is a changeup that's pretty much top of the line, so it's not really a great example to use just because it neutralizes, you know, lefties, righties. It doesn't really matter who he throws it to. But, you know, being a lefty with such an advanced changeup sometimes can, you know, negate having just kind of a so-so breaking ball. It's not a hard and fast rule I have by any means, but, you know, it is a factor that I do weigh pretty considerably.
Okay. And that's probably a whole other podcast or feature, you know, the preferences for curveball, slider.
I think, in terms of the development of, you know, what pitch you can project, you know, you can project fastball velocity a little bit. You can project, you know, a guy's ability to throw a changeup based on, you know, his, you know, how his arm works, how free and loose he is. You know, if a guy's, you know, pretty max effort guy, he's probably not going to, or has trouble repeating his arm slide. You know, maybe the changeup is not something you can, you know, project on a guy, and maybe you end up looking at him in a different role rather than as a starter. So, you know, the projection on each individual pitch can, you know, vary, and it depends on, you know, which scout you talk to or who you're talking to, but everyone has their different beliefs on that.
And before we finish our final pool of pitchers, which is relievers, I wanted to mention this year we have, we've ranked the positions by star power. Out of 5 stars, we gave right-handed starters 4.5, and we went 35 deep in that category. With left-handers, we gave them 4, went 20 deep. It's a very deep positions in the minors right now. And with relievers, we gave them 2 stars and went only 10 deep. And we probably should begin with the positive here and maybe hear a little bit about a few of your favorite relievers among this 10-player pool.
Well, relievers are obviously, you know, the best relievers, the best future major league relievers are going to be on this, on our right-handed and our left-handed starting pitching prospects list. Now, obviously, if you... these are the guys who probably have the most talent in the minor leagues right now, but for, you know, X, Y, or Z reasons, they end up getting hurt, or, you know, maybe for some reason their stuff plays up a little bit better in the bullpen. They might end up moving to, you know, to relief in the big leagues. And one guy who looks like he's already going to move into the bullpen role is Adam Miller, the Cleveland Indians right-handed pitcher. He's been a starter throughout the minor leagues, but can't really mention Adam Miller without talking about his inability to stay healthy. It's just basically, fortunately, what he's, you know, known for mostly. When you think of the name Adam Miller, you think of, you know, all the injuries that he's had over his career. You know, that said, his stuff is still there, it sounds like. You know, he's hitting 97 miles an hour with his fastball. You know, he still has that electric arm. The injuries really haven't taken a toll. You know, he's had some finger problems. He really hasn't had a bad shoulder problem that's really zapped him of any of his arm strength or anything like that. So, you know, the fastball is still there, the slider is still there. He does throw strikes, he does miss bats. So he's a guy, you say, all right, we're not going to worry about trying to keep him healthy over 200 innings because, you know, it's probably just not going to happen right now. So let's just put him in the bullpen where he can just air it out in one-inning stints. And he's a guy who I think, you know, they have Kerry Wood there. He's probably almost a perfect guy to, you know, mentor Adam Miller and help him out in his development in the bullpen. So, you know, he could potentially be setting up Kerry Wood, and one day, you know, if Kerry Wood leaves in a couple of years, I think Miller could possibly supplant him in the back of Cleveland's bullpen. You know, Matt, when you look at some of these guys, obviously Samardzija made an impact in the big leagues this year. Chris Perez got a taste. Daniel Bard's throwing 100 miles an hour. Jose Seda's throwing 100 miles an hour. Obviously, a lot of really hard-throwing guys in the bullpen in the minor leagues. And then we have our X-Factors, Joshua Fields, who recently signed with the Mariners, and Jason Mott. You know, another guy who's pumping up in the high 90s. Who is the guy who you look at from this list as a, you know, a guy to watch to make an impact in a big league bullpen?
Probably the ultimate example of that is the Twins lefty, Jose Mijares. The first lefty we ranked among relievers, a player who got into a car accident, I believe it was last January, in his native Venezuela, and missed a chunk of the year, but seems to have shown no ill effects from fracturing his pitching elbow. And he's intriguing for the rare velocity he offers for a lefty, the type of guy who can... He's not a strictly left-on-left guy out of the bullpen. He's somebody who Ron Gardenhire can go to for an inning at a time to you know, retire the heart of the order if need be. Maybe not right out of the gate, but in the second half of this season, he's somebody who, provided he keeps conditioning a priority, he's a guy who tends to gain weight. Provided that happens, I think he could be an impact reliever. So he would be my sleeper, so to speak.
I think that's he's definitely an interesting guy. I think, you know, obviously Jason Mock to me is also just kind of a fascinating story in terms of, you know, his path to the big leagues and, you know, what he's able to do. I think the question on him is, will he have enough, you know, secondary stuff to be able to succeed at the major league level? I think he's already shown that, you know, he does have a track record in AAA of striking out, I think it was almost 15 batters per 9 innings. You know, at that point, when a guy is striking out that many guys in AAA, you know, I'll believe in him. I have a belief that he'll be able to, you know, translate that into major league success, because that's just so many bats missed.
And he did too in his four-week audition. I get there's some deception there. I think he kind of how was his motion described? Did you hear? It was kind of like he hides it well, and then it's kind of like a dart.
It sounds
motion.
Like he does have some deception in his delivery, and when you're, you know, most guys aren't really deceptive and throw in the high 90s. Usually it's deceptive and 88 to 91 that we hear about, and, you know, fooling a lot of guys like that. You know, maybe they raise their front side, or, you know, pretty short arm action, kind of a, you know, a stabber in the back, and, you know, he was a former catcher, so, you know, that would make sense. But, you know, he actually has the deception and the high octane arm and the power stuff that you love to have in a closer like that.
Definitely. Okay, so I think we're coming to the end of our pitcher segment here. And don't forget to check out the online version of this, as I've alluded to at least two other times. So, do you have any final thoughts on pitchers, Ben?
I think it's obviously gonna, it's every year we're probably gonna have a pretty deep crop of pitchers. You know, this year obviously we have you know, Michael Ynoa on the list this year, and Martin Perez. You know, a couple of standout Latin guys. Obviously, Perez has already pitched. He's the only left-handed pitcher. You don't usually see a lot of lefties necessarily coming out of Latin America. So I think just going forward to mention a couple of Latin American arms, I think those are two guys to obviously watch going forward. And, you know, Ynoa, you know, where do you rank Ynoa? I mean, we didn't even rank Felix Hernandez in the entire handbook the year that, you know, the handbook came out after he first originally signed. You know, now I think Latin American prospects get a little bit more recognition than they used to, or there's a little bit more attention drawn to them. So, you know, should we rank Michael Ynoa, you know, in our top 100? You know, where should he rank in the top 100? Should we even put him in the book at all? Or, you know, I think he certainly deserves to be in the book. I mean, we didn't put Hernandez in the book, obviously, but, you know, now he's a potential Cy Young candidate at 23, going on, you know, 24 years old, I believe. So, you know, those are some of the decisions that we have to make. You know, I like where Ynoa ranked at 54. So I think he's obviously one guy just to, you know, we'll see how he does this year. But, you know, he'll only be 17 this year, so I'll have to check back on him in 10 years.
Indeed. Okay, so for Ben Badler, I'm Matt Eddy. Thank you for downloading this Baseball America podcast.